As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
You know, make no mistake, if this ends up being a real sort of tempestuous encounter with a red card or two and a bit of needle in it, then that will carry over to the league game.
It should be a brilliant game to watch for anyone who enjoys watching kind of David and Goliath cup games.
If they stay in the cup, you know, there's no reason why they can't go on a cup run and give their fans something to cheer about.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. I'm Dan Bardell and this is the Weekend Preview. It's time for the Premier League to take a backseat as the FA Cup fourth round takes centre stage, and we're here to look at Manchester City against Arsenal. Is there a potential giant killing as Leeds travel to Accrington Stanley? Preston take on Tottenham, and we're also going to have a look at Brighton and Liverpool, as well as a little look at all the other games there is in the FA Cup fourth round. As ever, I'm joined by George Ellick and Tim Spears, and we've got Richard Mofer with us again as well to look at the FA Cup. And everyone okay?
Yeah, really, really good.
Yeah, good, mate.
But excited for the FA Cup. This is where I feel George Ellick comes alive, because you've got a mixture of Premier League and AFL, and this is what he is all about.
It, definitely this year as well, because there are so many EFL teams still in it. We've had a combination of lots of Premier League teams playing against each other and loads of shocks. So normally by this stage, it's getting a bit boring where it's just Premier League teams against each other, but we've got non-league sides still in it. We've got plenty of, you know, League One and League Two sides taking on the Premier League. So, and then, you know, if that's not enough, loads of League One and League Two fixtures as well. So I'm in clover this weekend.
As you've said that, we're going to start with Manchester City against Arsenal, the Premier League top two. Go head-to-head Friday, 8 o'clock kickoff, the first game of this FA Cup weekend. And Tim, it's kind of the game we've all been waiting for all season. It hasn't happened yet in the Premier League, so we've got a little sneak preview by having it in the FA Cup.
Yeah, it's an aperitif, isn't it, really, rather than the main course. There'll be a few changes, I'm sure. And it does a bit detract from, yeah, the long-awaited build-up for this game. We won't have to wait long for the first proper league match. But
Couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think it will have an impact on... It's bound to have an impact on the sort of feeling or the psychological feeling between the two clubs, which has sort of started already, really. It's not quite psychological warfare yet, but it's definitely heating up. You know, when you've got Pep saying, I don't want to win this league this year, like, Arsenal can win it, it's fine.
And then, it's very easy to say that when you sat second.
Yeah, exactly. But it's all mind games. Like, you know, no one should be fooled that it's anything but. And when he had his incredible outburst last week about the fans and the club, the Happy Flowers Club, as he was terming it, you got Gary Neville saying Arsenal are going to finish third. You know, it's all starting to heat up a little bit. You know, make no mistake, if this ends up being a real sort of tempestuous encounter with a red card or two and a bit of needle in it, then that will carry over to the league game. As would, I guess, a massive win one way or the other would sort of set a bit of a standard and, you know, eye up a bit of revenge for the league fixture, that kind of thing. So this will definitely leave its mark. You know, it won't quite be the contest that we're hoping for, but it'll definitely be worth watching.
Yeah, shades of me when Villa got knocked out of the FA Cup from Pep Guardiola. I didn't want to win a cup anyway. Around the Premier League. It's not what I wanted. FA Cup win. Not for me this season. Let's concentrate on the league. Rich, what kind of team are we expecting these two to put out? we've alluded to there, that there probably will be changes. But I feel like Man City in some ways, there aren't many changes they make. They don't really have a weakened side. Whereas for Arsenal, maybe that would be one criticism of them, is that their squad's not perhaps as deep as some of the other teams in the top six.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I'd expect both sides to put out slightly changed sides. But as you say, City are so strong, the depth they've got is incredible, isn't it? So even if they were to change 3, 4, or 5 players, the side that they would put out would still be full of internationals, still be extremely strong and extremely competitive. And I think that's where they may have the edge over Arsenal, not just in this game, but throughout the rest of the season as well. I mean, Arsenal have got a great start at 11, one or two off the bench. But after that, you're looking and thinking, you know, if you get a couple of injuries to your key players, who's going to come in and make the difference? So that's something that Arsenal have to think about. I know they're keen to strengthen in midfield in this window, maybe another central midfielder, I should say, due to Nene's injury. But like I say, other than that, as you say, you should, regardless of whether City, say, rest 3, 4, or 5 players, they'll still be very strong. And I think Arsenal would still want to win this game, regardless of the changes made, because, course, as we know, momentum is a big thing, it's a big deal. And, you know, they want to keep up their winning run. So I see both sides will go into the game very competitive. And as Tim alluded to as well, a psychological edge that it would give to the league fixture would be very important, I feel.
Yeah, we mentioned rotation there, George, and in my opinion, Thomas Partey, in the title race, he's probably the most pivotal player. I think he's irreplaceable for Arsenal, everything he offers. Gary Neville was talking about him the other night, saying over the last 3 games he's watched him closely and just talking about all the good things that he brings Arsenal. As much as they probably want to go far in the FA Cup, surely you wouldn't risk Partey in a game like this, because he is indispensable for Arsenal.
Yeah, I guess it all depends on whether Mikel Arteta sees this as a chance to draw first blood in this trilogy of games against City, or if it's a game that he's happy to lose. And will his players have the mentality, if they do lose this game, to bounce back and not let it play a part in the two games that in the coming in the Premier League, which are probably two of Arsenal's biggest games in recent history. I was at the Oxford-Arsenal game, which Arsenal won 3-0 playing their, you know, Europa League team. And even though they won the game 3-0, they were poor. For the first hour, there was very little between the two sides. Yeah, a midfield two of Elneny and Lokonga is not the same as Thomas Partey and Granit Xhaka. So I'm intrigued to see how they play this. There's no denying that City's second team is much better than Arsenal's second team. Even if it is a different set of players, you can't help but feel that Arsenal going to City, playing a weakened side, and a weakened side that would probably still include 4 or 5 first team players for Arsenal, and going home on the receiving end of a pretty resounding defeat, that cannot be positive going forward. You've also got to remember that, you know, there's a relationship between these two head coaches, and maybe there's been some private conversations between them as to how they're likely to approach this one. So I'm intrigued to see how it's going to play out. And I think until we see the teams, it's impossible to know what bearing it's going to have long term in the title race.
I mean, the thought of no Partey or Xhaka made Rich throw his microphone on the floor in absolute fear. He went there just hearing that they might not be there. His microphone ended up on the deck. I guess however they do choose to line up these two teams, I guess now in some ways, Tim, Rico Lewis, is he now first choice, so won't play in the FA Cup? Because he seems to have played in quite a lot of the big games, Rico Lewis.
Yeah, good question. Saw him against Spurs recently and he was really impressive. Looks very composed and mature for his age. And, you know, but I think Pep isn't the kind of manager, or Guardiola, should I say. I hate calling people by their first names. Guardiola is not the kind of manager who would say, it's your shirt, you've got every game with it. Mm. I think he'll know when to bring him out and back in again. He can't be playing every game, this kid, you know, especially with the intensity of the matches they've got coming up. So, yeah, it will be a different dynamic. You know, when you've got Turner and Ortega in nets, it's not quite going to have the gravitas that it would have for the league game. I just hope it's sort of like 2, 3, 4 changes rather than 8, 9, 10 for both teams.
Yeah.
And ITV will certainly be hoping for the same. In terms of the cup itself and how both teams will be taking it, the draw's opened up already, and I was having a look earlier at who's still left in and who might be dumped out after this weekend. But out of the top 13 teams in the Premier League, only 5 will be left after this weekend. So a few have already gone, and then obviously one of these two will lose, and one of Brighton or Liverpool will lose. So Newcastle, Chelsea have gone, Brentford and Villa, Palace and Forest so far, and more to come. So the draw is opening up, and you know, come the 5th and the 6th rounds, there'll be some unfancy teams really fancying their chances of doing something in this competition.
Yeah, just looking at the prices now with Bet365, City, unsurprisingly, the favourites at 5-2, even though they've got this tough draw, but they are still odds on to beat Arsenal at home. Manchester United are 9-2, Tottenham 7-1, Liverpool 7-1, Arsenal out to 9-1, you know, reflecting the idea that they're probably unlikely to progress through this one. Then Brighton 16-1, West Ham 16-1, Leicester 25-1, Fulham 25-1, Leeds 25-1, Burnley, Southampton both 50-1. Sheffield United 60-1. Then you've got 100-1 plus those teams that come after that. West Brom, Stoke, Luton, Blackpool, Sunderland, Birmingham. And it does, you know, I'm sitting here, that it feels like there's got to be an opportunity to find some values amongst some of those bigger price teams because of the way that the draw has fallen. Like personally, Fulham being 25-1 when they've got a home tie against Sunderland, the championship side, seems ludicrous. Like they are the same price as Leicester and the same price as Leeds when all the evidence in front of us from the Premier League season is that they are a far, far better side than both of those two teams with a fairly easy draw to get through to the next round. And then, you know, you are chancing your arm a little bit, but if you can find, you know, a Burnley, for example, a 50-1 who have a League One opposition, although albeit a very good opposition in Ipswich, it does feel like an opportunity where if you back, I don't know, two or three big price teams here each way who you feel will get through this first round of games on the weekend, all you need is a couple of favourable draws and you're not far away from getting to the final. So it's definitely a really interesting betting heat. And, you know, even for those who aren't that way inclined, it does feel like an FA Cup where we could see some, you know, EFL clubs going pretty deep into the competition.
What a Wrexham, George.
I mean, that's another, although obviously a tough tie, but Wrexham 750-1. Just because Rob McElhenney follows you on Twitter, Dan, you've exposed yourself.
Just because of the documentary, George.
You're a shill.
Superb documentary.
You're love to go down there to Hollywood
and taking a game. Unbelievable. So that documentary, if you haven't watched it, is absolutely exceptional, in my opinion. Next, we'll discuss two EFL sides welcoming Premier League sides to Lancashire, hoping to provide shocks.
I'm Adam Hurry, host of a unique football podcast, one of the top 20 football podcasts in Guatemala, a cult football podcast. No, actually, it's one of the most important football podcasts. Football Clichés, a product of nearly 20 years of obsessive research, is a podcast about the mundane and magical depths of the language of football, the curious and sometimes almost subliminal things that define the way we consume the modern game. At what age is a player eligible to roll back the years? When does a club's highly rated conveyor belt of talent turn into a fabled production line? How many types of goal-scoring header are there in the footballing vocabulary? Football Clichés doesn't just leave no stone unturned. It looks at every single stone and wonders, what's the threshold for a stone to become a rock? But for football, obviously. Listen for your sins on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to the Weekend Preview here on the Athletic Football Podcast. And next up for us, it's Accrington Stanley against Leeds, which is Saturday lunchtime. Accrington beat Bournemouth Wood in extra time on Tuesday after the initial third round tie had been postponed. Accrington last reached the fourth round in 2019, and that ended with the famous John Coleman clip.
I'm physically sick, to be honest. I'm rapidly falling out of love with football. I just wonder what's the point anymore, you know.
Of course, he's stuck around since then. George, we'll come to you first, our resident EFL expert. What Accrington players should we keep an eye on?
Tough question. I mean, they had a couple of decent players in Dion Charles and Colby Bishop in recent seasons, but both have moved on. I mean, there's in Sean McConville, you've got kind of the older statesman of Accrington, who's having a brilliant season, a real ally of John Coleman, who initially brought him to Accrington back in 2009. Tommy Lee is a decent player for them as well. I mean, they're a team probably lacking in stars, but if there's ever a manager who consistently does such an impressive job and has kind of normalised success to the extent now that people just anticipate that Accrington are going to be a mid-table League One side, it's got to be John Coleman. You know, the work that they do, they recruit incredibly well from Premier League academies. And yeah, I mean, Coleman, Accrington stand near where they are because of the success of Coleman and what he's brought to that club. And it's probably not going to last. You know, naturally teams with low budgets generally do tend to go out via the trapdoor. But yeah, season on season, they punch above their weight.
Now, I'm going to start off this next segment by clarifying that I actually really like what Leeds are trying to do, and I really like Jesse Marsh as well, and I think Leeds aren't far away from being a good team. But did anyone see their keys to the game principles? No, did anyone see it? It was on the Athletic Leeds article in the week. Basically, a fan went around the training ground and took a photo of Leeds' keys to the game. I'm trying to read them out to you because I've been fascinated by this all week, and it'd be nice if we could apply some of these to the podcast. Number one, fast starts, always online, brackets, throw-ins. I mean, always online has been a problem for George today, but you know, that means always, I'm taking it that means always switched on, especially from throw-ins. Number two is stay aggressive, in brackets, sprinting going in. Three is minimal width vertical counter press. Four, go in, join in and swarm, brackets, prevent switches. Five, shifting, pumping and defending forward. I've absolutely no idea what pumping means in football terms. Six, play forward. Seven, clean sheet mentality. And eight, celebrate moments. Tim, you said you'd seen this. This is one of my favourite things I think I've ever seen in football.
It's great. I love how these things get out. I mean, God knows how on earth a fan has managed to get in to take a picture of
this.
It's
like when the fine sheets gets out, isn't it? The fine
sheets. Oh, I love that.
But this is next level.
No, it is, yeah. Well, it's really interesting what's happening with Leeds and Jesse Marsh at the moment. I think there were reports recently that the squad aren't united with him, very much refuted by the Athletic's Phil Hay, aka you know, the Bible on Leeds, who says that actually, to the contrary, senior players really took umbrage with those reports, and there's been discussions had in the dressing room about how they're not true, and you know, the recent performance at Villa would certainly suggest that that's the case, even though they didn't get a result there. February's a massive month for Leeds, regardless of what happens in this game against Accrington. It's make or break time coming up in the next few weeks. I don't know if you've seen their fixtures, but they've got a double header against Man United, which is so rare in this day and age, but there's a league double header back to back, biggest game of the season for most, in the eyes of most Leeds fans, regardless of who are on the table. And then they've got Forest and Everton away and Southampton at home. So you don't really want to chuck a cup run into that and fixture congestion. However, equally, when you're a manager under pressure and a team low on confidence, you don't want to lose to Accrington in the FA Cup either. So, however, if you're looking for an upset this weekend, I think this is one place to cast your eyes on. And Accrington, obviously, you know, struggling in League One, but I'll disregard that, to be honest. I think it's got the ingredients for an upset. I can see Marsh making a lot of changes. And if they get through, then great, because they'd avoid humiliation. But otherwise, I don't think the FA Cup's a priority at all for them this season.
Yeah, Rich, I was quite surprised, you know, that the Athletic's refuted it, as Tim says. I was surprised to read reports that the Leeds players aren't all in on Jesse Marsh, because when you watch them play, pretty apparent that they are. They don't half put in a shift. Obviously, I was at that Villa Park game. The tempo they play and the work rate they put in, and it does fall down a little bit when they get into the penalty box, and probably a little bit in the other penalty box as well, although they kept a clean sheet against Brentford. But I would say it's clear as day those players are playing for Jesse Marsh.
Yeah, exactly. As the those little motivational quotes said, you know, you look at Leeds, the way they play, they are very much a side in his image, aren't they? As you say, just a...
They're always pumping. Always pumping.
No, exactly. You know, they're high energy, high press, high octane. As you say, you know, maybe lacking a little bit of quality in the final third, but as you saw from that Villa game, even from the Cardiff game in the last round, in the first game, where, you know, they looked like they were dead and buried, and, you know, they got a late goal there. And you can see how they all came together and they celebrated. And that's normally, you know, a sign of a side who, okay, things might not be going well, but they're ready and willing to go to the end, not just for themselves, but for the manager too. So, yeah, very surprised to hear those reports, and, you know, not surprised that, you know, Phil Hay is on the ball with that to strongly refute that. But as Tim said, you know, it's a really, really big month coming up for them. I said earlier about momentum. Of course, they won't want to lose this game just because of, you know, the humiliation. But if they didn't have a cup run to contend with and really focused on the league. And say the games that they, that Tim's mentioned, especially that after United, the three games roughly around teams at the bottom, which if they do win those games, they can really kind of build a bit of a distance between the bottom. So really big month ahead. And as you say, the team does look united, contrary to reports, and they'll just want to go onwards and upwards if they can escape a banana skin this weekend.
Yeah, they've added Verber to their ranks, who played left centre-back against Brentford. And it sounds like Weston McKennie might be on the way as well to join their US men's team ranks. So that would be an interesting signing if that goes through. Because I think him, Tyler Adams and Aronson in midfield, that's a hell of a midfield. And obviously they all play for the same country. George, I've got no memory of these defeats whatsoever. I'm hoping you have. Leeds in recent seasons have been knocked out against Newport and Crawley. And obviously it did take a replay to beat Cardiff City in the last round. So they're no strangers to cup sets.
No, they're not. And it's a difficult position this for Jesse Marsh to be in, because, you know, they're currently 7-2 for relegation. There is no denying that this is not a priority, this competition right now. They've got to make sure they stay up. But similarly, if they were to get knocked out away at Accrington Stanley, it's going to make Jesse Marsh's position a little bit trickier to protect. So, you know, they've got a terrible record in recent years in cup competitions. I don't think that necessarily helps Marsh. I think he can, you know, hopefully end that here. I mean, they should be okay, really. I mean, Accrington are having a pretty poor campaign by their standards, not to take anything away from the job that Coleman does. This is the first year in plenty where they look like they might be threatened with relegation. And you would anticipate that Leeds should have too much. I mean, Leeds' squad is fairly deep as well. You know, they've got this group of young players who are forcing their way into first team contention at the moment. You know, we've seen, you know, whether or not the likes of Noto are going to play here, we're not entirely sure. Drama, another one who's been linked to loan moves to championship sides at the moment too. But it's not like there's a lack of depth at Leeds. It should be a brilliant game to watch for anyone who enjoys watching kind of David and Goliath cup games.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to that one. Saturday lunchtime, I've got to say, out of all the fixtures, that's probably the one I'm looking forward to the most, except for Wrexham, of course. Let's look now at Preston North End against Tottenham, which is Saturday at 6 p.m. Tottenham were back to winning ways against Fulham on Monday night. Harry Kane scoring and reaching 266 goals for the club, which is the same as Jimmy Greaves discounting Community Shield goals. Tim, Tottenham, your patch now. Harry Kane, still just an incredible striker, isn't he? His goal was just, that's vintage Harry Kane on Monday night, and a big win for them, to be fair, because they were starting to feel the pressure a little bit, and Fulham's not easier.
Yeah, stunning goal. His form since the World Cup's been remarkable, to be honest. Now that I'm sort of in the Spurs bubble, I think I see it more than ever how much Harry Kane's sort of underappreciated, really. People talked about the penalty against France being certainly the most sort of high-profile negative moment of his career, and how would he bounce back? You know, he bounced back by scoring in his next game, and he hasn't really stopped scoring since. But it just kind of gets taken for granted, to be honest. I haven't got a clue I know where Spurs would be without him, because I counted up what his goals have meant this season the other day, and it's 13 points worse off, I think, and in the bottom half of the table. You know, again, last season's Golden Boot winner has barely scored all season and doesn't look like regaining that form at all. Son Heung-min, Richarlison hasn't scored yet in the Premier League after a £60 million move.
Really? I didn't realise that.
I just feel like that's the thing. I feel like these things get unnoticed, really. But I'm gonna champion in public domain just how bad Spurs are at certain things. And yeah, but Kane gets them out of trouble every week, and that's maybe why, you know, we don't notice the form of others as much. And yeah, he's on the verge of breaking the record. You'd certainly fancy him to score against Preston and do that. I think it's... if he's going to handpick where to break Jimmy Greaves' record, it'd be at home, I'm sure, or against Arsenal. But it does a nice little traditional element to scoring the winner at Preston, maybe. One of English football's most traditional and oldest clubs, and a club that Spurs nicked their colours from, which I didn't realise till last week when deciding what colour kits to wear. They took Preston's, as they were the champions at the time. So yeah, big game for Spurs. Like a lot of Premier League teams, unless you're in the Carabao Cup semi-finals, you've got a full week until the next Premier League game, which I think is why we'll see perhaps stronger teams than you might normally this weekend. But certainly from Tottenham's point of view, we've said it on this podcast before, but 15 years of that trophy now, and they're starting to bubble up at a nice time. They've got injured players back. They've signed Danjuma this week from Villarreal, who'll be a really good addition to their attacking front line.
Pretty much signing from Everton in some ways.
Yeah, so he was at Everton. He'd done his medical. He was given Everton training kit to wear. Then he went down to London, which I think is where he was staying. and he was due to get the train back up to Liverpool.
And then he checked the train prices from London to Liverpool. Hey. Thought,
no, there was a strike on, so he couldn't make it. He was due to come back up to Liverpool to meet his agent, and he just never got on that train because in between Spurs had phoned and said, "Do you want to come and join us instead?" And with Frank Lampard getting sacked on the same day, it didn't take too long to change his mind. Really good addition. And Spurs with Richarlison, Bentancur and Kulusevski back from injury are looking pretty strong now.
Antonio Conte won the FA Cup with Chelsea back in 2018 and reached the final in 2017. Rich, do you think Spurs fans would sacrifice the top four? Not that football works like this at all, but do you think they'd sacrifice the top four just to win a trophy? Because it has been a long time without a trophy. I mean, in my world, 2008 isn't that long ago, and I'd have done anything for Villa to have won a trophy in 2008 even, because it's been so long. But, you know, would they swap that? Would they rather? I think they may rather have the FA Cup than top four, actually.
Yeah, especially how the season's going. And it's a thing, isn't it? Spurs and trophies and, you know, the stick they get from their London rivals. So I think from a fan's perspective, going to Wembley, lifting a trophy, it's massive. And it's something that Antonio Conte would like to add to his armoury as well. Obviously, you know, he's won trophies at Chelsea with Juventus. And of course, he'd like to add to that with Spurs as well. So yeah, I think from the fans I speak to anyway, I think that the trophy thing or lack of it is something that does arc them a bit, especially, as you say, from the stick they get from opposition fans and often in the media as well. And I think it's justified, you know, a club of Spurs' side should have won maybe one or two more trophies in that period. So, and, you know, as we alluded to earlier, you know, with the number of, you know, top Premier League sides who could be out of the tournament by this weekend, if Spurs, are, you know, if they stay in the cup, you know, there's no reason why they can't go on a cup run and give their fans something to cheer about.
Yeah, in some ways, Harry Kane breaking the record in the cup run, and then they go on and win the cup. There'd be something nice about that in some ways. And I think Harry Kane would even sacrifice Champions League football to say that he's won a trophy, because that's something that's levelled at him quite a lot. Harry Kane, no matter what the records are that he breaks, he still never won anything. So I think in some ways he might take the cup over finishing top four as well. Do let us know, Harry. I'd be interested to know what you think. Preston North End have only scored 10 in 15 home games this season, although three of those came in the previous round against Huddersfield. But they do have a little bit of a striker crisis going on. They're without Troy Parrott, who is unable to play against his parent club. And Liam Delap is cup-tied, having played for Stoke in the third round. George, give us the scoop on Preston.
Bit of a Jekyll and Hyde team, to be honest, where they can put in performances where they look superb, such as the big derby win at Ewood Park, beating them 4-1 a few weeks ago, and then they can go and get beaten 4-0 at home by Norwich, which is what we saw the Saturday before last. Ryan Lowe's a really promising young manager who did great things at Bury before they went out of business, and then at Plymouth Argyle as well. I think there are similarities between Preston and Accrington in terms of the normalisation of a mid-table finish for Preston. You know, Preston consistently are punching above their weight, always on the kind of the outside chance of a playoffs, who never seemingly quite get there. But their manager recruitment has been superb. Alex Neil did a great job there over a period of time. And Ryan Lowe is doing that now. In terms of players they are lacking, yes, you know, Delap and Parrott will be a loss. You know, Delap struggled to make much of an impact at Stoke. I haven't been impressed with him at all, given his reputation for Manchester City so far. And then Parrott, again, has struggled to really make his mark. I think Delap and Parrott are two of the most overhyped Premier League starlets we've seen in recent seasons, where, you know, they get their name made, scoring goals in youth teams. Fans of those clubs are convinced they're going to be the next big thing. And then when they actually play men's football, they look okay at best. Obviously, time for them to develop. But they've got Tom Cannon on loan from Everton, who'll probably start up front here because I don't think he's cup-tied. Ben Woodburn, you know, formerly of Liverpool fame. So some decent attacking players in there. And they, you know, I'm sure they will give themselves a good account of themselves here against Spurs.
There's some serious Premier League academy players knocking around in that side, or former academy players in the Premier League as well, all the names you've just mentioned there. We're going to finish this segment with the trivia. And as we've mentioned, Harry Kane is looking to surpass Jimmy Greaves' Tottenham scoring record. Within the Premier League era then, who is the leading FA Cup goal scorer? I've got a name in my head, but I'll go last. Rich, I'll come to you first.
I think of a side who's done quite well in this cup and gone relatively deep. I think of Man City, so I'm going to say Sergio Aguero.
Sergio Aguero, not a bad guess. Tim?
I was thinking Arsenal or Chelsea. I think we'll go with Henri.
Henri, interesting. George?
I feel like you've gone for the two obvious ones there, which is kind of...
I think you might take mine.
I mean, I'm just going to say Shearer, even though he wouldn't have gone that deep, just for longevity.
Shearer. I was thinking Chelsea. I'm going to go Drogba. But I don't know the answer without looking at my phone. So the big reveal for all of us about to come up. Oh, I got the right team, but not the right player. Hard question, that is, because it's not the position you'd expect to be.
Don't be Lampard.
No, it's not Lampard.
No, that was my other one. I can't believe it.
It's Lampard.
It makes sense.
I literally thought to myself, I was going to say him, and I thought you'd be like, you haven't even chosen a striker.
27?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is a lot of goals, isn't it, in the FA Cup? Fair play to Frank Lampard. Yeah, you automatically go striker. Were you really? Was that the other one you were thinking, George?
Chelsea's
record goal scorer as well, isn't it?
I know.
That'll cheer Lampard up while he's sat at home watching the FA Cup this week.
That's true.
And this time, Frank Lampard! Oh! Pick that up! Frank Lampard blasts Chelsea into the lead for the first time. And is that the winning goal?
Next, we'll assess Liverpool's FA Cup hopes as they head to Brighton 2 weeks on from being humbled on the South Coast.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right then, before we continue with the podcast, please remember that if you are going to have a bet this weekend, make sure that you do so responsibly. George, you've got some helpful tips on how to make sure that we do just that.
Yeah, it's important to us that the listeners of this podcast are in control of their gambling. This is a podcast for those who are 18 years of age and older. Please ensure that you are only staking what you can afford to lose, and do visit begambleaware.org for any information to ensure that you're gambling responsibly.
This is the weekend preview here on the Athletic Football Podcast. We're going to look now at Brighton and Hove Albion against Liverpool, which is Sunday at 1:30 p.m. Brighton, of course, won this fixture 3-0 in the Premier League 2 weeks back. Any chances of a repeat, Rich?
I think we'll see a similar outcome. I don't know whether it'll be 3-0 again, although, you know, Brighton are free scoring and not really much has changed from Liverpool's perspective. So I'd expect Brighton to win this game. Scoring lots of goals, and as I alluded to a few weeks ago in the pod, you know, I think De Zerbi is, or the players think De Zerbi has increased the level there. Whereas at Liverpool, it seems to have almost plateaued a bit. Okay, decent win at Wolves in the last round in the replay, but not really seen anything from them to inspire. You know, pretty insipid against Chelsea last weekend as well, and Brighton just continued to excite. I think, you know, they've scored 3 goals in just under half of their matches under De Zerbi. A very exciting prospect, very exciting team to watch. And while it may not be as emphatic as a league fixture, it's weird to say, but I expect Brighton to win this game.
Yeah, I think they're one of the favourites for the Cup, actually. I was listening to Adam Lallana talk about De Zerbi in the week as well, interview with him, and the way he spoke about him, he sounds like he's an absolutely incredible manager, attention to detail, and fair play. You know, it looks like, despite, you know, Potter left Brighton, it wasn't as if Brighton wanted him to go, De Zerbi's coming in, and it looks like he may be the man to take them to the next level, which is really, really interesting. And someone who's taken his game to the next level, Tim, is Mitoma. Really electric down that flank at the moment for Brighton. They just do this, don't they? They sell people who have actually become big-name players whilst at Brighton, and they always just find someone from within to come in and do a better job, it seems.
So I wish I'd thought of this because it's such a good line, but my colleague, I think it was Jerry Durso, put this on Twitter the other day, that he compared Brighton to the Sugar Babes because the lineup keeps changing, but they just keep dropping bangers. I just absolutely love that analogy. Yeah, and also Andy Naylor.
That is journalism. That is journalism.
That's what I aspire to, Dan, every single day. My colleague Andy Naylor did a piece looking back at Brighton's 11 from a year ago. Just a year ago, it blew my mind, to be honest. In that team, I think they played Everton, Bissouma, Dan Burn, Cucurella, Trossard, Morpay, Mwepu, of course, had to retire. And just look at them now, like, I think on the same number of points or just about as last season, but on an upward curve. And, you know, if De Zerbi's the manager that we're starting to see that he is, then as they become more accustomed to him, then, you know, they could just improve further, really. So, yeah, just a great success story, as we all know. I like the idea of them going deep in the cup. And if they were to reach Europe one way or the other this season, it would be the first time in their history, which would be so great for them and cap off this journey of the past sort of 3, 4, 5 years.
Interesting as well. I definitely agree that Brighton look the team more likely to win this. That's not reflected at all, where Liverpool are the favourites to win this in 90 minutes. They're 29-20 with Bet365. Brighton 17-10. And then to lift the cup market, Liverpool 7-1, Brighton 16-1. So, the market not reflecting what we all seem to be seeing over the last couple of weeks.
Been desperately trying to fit a Sugar Babe reference into what I'm about to say, and I just can't think of any Sugar Babe songs. I've got a tune in my head.
Just keep going round, round, baby. Come on.
Oh, here we go. I did have a tune in my head, but I don't even know what the song's called.
Push the button.
That would have been a good one. I'm not sure how I would have worked it into the podcast. There was something about there's a one-way ticket to a something destination.
Don't sing. That's amazing that you sung.
Right, Brighton on an upward trajectory. Liverpool, it feels, on a bit of a downward one at the moment. And Klopp's been discussing loyalty and a transitional season for Liverpool, George. How much work needs doing in the summer? Because I felt like in January when they added Diaz, we were looking at their squad and looking at their bench and saying, Liverpool have now got a serious squad. They've got depth everywhere. Players not even getting on the bench with the 9 subs. Come forward a year and you're now talking about them having no depth at all. It doesn't quite feel right.
I don't really understand what's going on there, if I'm honest. Because I don't think the squad and the players they've got at their disposal are as bad as the performances they're putting in. You know, if you take Liverpool's 3 seasons, you've got the title-winning season and then a massive drop-off, which was explained totally because of injuries, and we could see the quality players out of the side, which explained that. Those players came back and they were half an hour away from winning the title again last season in a season where them and City were so dominant. But now, yes, they've had injury issues over the course of the season, but the team is good. Key players have mostly been fit. I think clearly Virgil van Dijk isn't quite the dominant centre-back that he was previously, and that's playing its part. I think they need more legs in midfield. You know, Harvey Elliott is a player that I'm incredibly keen on, but it feels like a bit of a baptism of fire for him this season at Liverpool, where he's now playing consistently week in, week out. Has been one of the best performers in a side where, but realistically,
left midfield on the weekend against Chelsea. That Liverpool team against Chelsea at the weekend, it felt like an FA Cup lunchtime tie that nobody wanted, the team selection. I thought it was really weird.
But that's what I think is kind of the issue now, where I think Jurgen Klopp is at a loss as to what's going on. And I think suddenly when you lose your sense of invincibility, when teams are fancy playing against you rather than fearing for what's going to happen, then quite quickly things change. And I basically think when you start seeing managers making decisions that kind of surprise you and perplex you and don't really seem to be aligned with the way that you expect them to do, that's kind of the beginning of the end, isn't it? And I'm not sitting here saying I think Jurgen Klopp is going to end up leaving Liverpool anytime soon. But it kind of smacks of desperation. It's like, well, we've got to roll the dice and do something different, even if that doesn't really make too much sense. So, yeah, I mean, do they need more players in the summer? I don't know. They seem to bring in a lot of players that don't really improve things right now. I think they could do with bringing in somebody who will do the Naby Keita role that Naby Keita never seemingly gets used to do. Somebody who can be those legs in the middle of the park, who can get around, who can break up play well, who can recycle the ball. Do they need another centre-back to be the long-term partner for Kanyate? Possibly. But then, you know, are you going to drop Virgil van Dijk? I'm at a loss. Luckily, I'm not the person making those decisions. But right now, they look like far less than some of their parts.
Part of the problem, isn't it? The person making the decisions keeps on changing now for Liverpool in terms of transfers, and they haven't added to the midfield for so long now, it feels, except for Artemelo, who hasn't played a minute from what I remember.
Yeah, it seems like you're talking about rebuild, as you mentioned. It's they always seem to be in a state of flux, Liverpool, don't they, with this ownership situation. We know that they like to be self-sustaining, and you know, I think last season was like 50 million net spend, which compared to their rivals is not a lot. But the issue which they've got, I mean, I know they ranked very high in the Deloitte money rankings, which came out this week, even ranked above Manchester United in terms of, you know, income. But the issue that they've got is, okay, they are looking for a rebuild, and while they want to be self-sustaining, the players who they may need to offload, and I think James Pearce alluded to this in his piece, may not be enough in order to raise the funds needed to get the Bellinghams of this world and the players and the calibre of what they need. And they're also in a state of flux off the pitch, I'd say. I mentioned the ownership situation. The director of football, Julian Ward, is also leaving at the end of the season. I mean, he's only been in the role for a year, and you know, he was instrumental in getting Salah tied down to a new deal. But, you know, of course, following the work of Michael Edwards was a big ask. But as you say, his replacement is going to be key, because a lot of pressure is going to be on his shoulders or her shoulders to come in and really get the ball rolling with this supposed rebuild. But as we say, in terms of how they're going to finance it and who they're going to target, who they're going to bring in, it's going to be difficult, because as you say, if they want to be the self-sustaining club, and as you say, they've invested money in the stadium and they have made good signings. But if they are going to want to go to the next level, they are going to need to invest in the side. And I struggle to see where they're going to recoup the funds from if they want to maintain that model in order to get the high caliber players that they need.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never bet against them in the Champions League, but having Real Madrid next is a huge ask the season Liverpool are having. So the FA Cup could represent their last real chance of silverware this season. So those are our featured games to look out for this weekend. There's, of course, other ties going on as well. We're going to look at a few of them here. Sunday at 4:30 sees the lowest-ranked side, Wrexham, who we've already talked about a little bit, take on Sheffield United. George, Sheffield United, obviously in the running for promotion at the moment. Is an FA Cup run kind of something they don't really need? Would they rotate and rest, I suspect?
No, I think they're far enough clear at the moment, and they, you know, they've won 11 of their last 13 games in the Championship, so I think they're probably quite fancy this. They're another team with decent squad depth. You know, you've got Daniel Jeberson at the moment keeping out Billy Sharp and Ollie McBurney. They're under a transfer embargo at the moment, so that is not ideal, but I think they will be pretty keen to make sure that they're not embarrassed on this stage against a Wrexham team who clearly fancy themselves to at the moment to come up against anyone.
Tim, hypothetically, Bet365 have given you a fiver to call a cup shock this round, a cup set, as we like to call it on this show. We were quite surprised. Well, I say we, I wasn't involved in it at all. We did make on this show Aston Villa against Stevenage. That was said that was going to be a cup shock in the third round, and of course, that is what ended up happening. Is there any in the fourth round that you think could follow suit?
Warsaw-Leicester's an interesting one for me. Leicester are just so unpredictable. Warsaw are a bit of a club on the up at the moment. They've got new owners. They've won 8-13, heading towards the playoffs in League Two. But the trump card for me in this will be Michael Flynn, who's got, obviously, a great record of upsets with Newport. And it seems like he's moulding the team in his image there and really starting to get them going. So I imagine it'd be a full house. And yeah, it's a rowdy little stadium when it gets going, the Banks's. And Leicester will not fancy it. They won't fancy it all. And I remember when they got absolutely spanked by Forest a year ago. And they're a team that can do that. You know, when they don't turn up, their mentality's been criticised a fair bit by Brendan Rodgers. So this is kind of a game where mentality's key.
Okay, good. I like it. Midlands feel to it as well, which I always welcome. We haven't spoken about Manchester United on this podcast, Rich. They take on Reading. Manchester United, the only team left in four competitions now. How significant would an FA Cup win be for Erik ten Hag this early in his tenure at Old Trafford?
Yeah, I think it'll be really significant just in terms of justifying his kind of performances and justifying his methods so far. And I think it's really clear to see that, you know, the players have bought into his methods and his, you know, style of play. And he's given players a lease of life and confidence as well. Of course, we've seen the League Cup, they're doing very well and, you know, one foot in the final now. And I guess an FA Cup run will do wonders as well. I think you look at United over the past few years. I mean, they've lost four semi-finals under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Lost in the final of the Europa League as well. And, you know, for a club of that size to not win the trophy since 2017 is quite significant. So, if they were to go ahead and have a good cup run and let's say secure the FA Cup, I think it will be fantastic and cap off a really, really good first season for Erik ten Hag.
United are 1-7 to beat Reading here in 90 minutes. So you think Paul Ince's return to Old Trafford might not be a particularly happy one. But it does, you know, it looks fairly likely that we're going to see United win a trophy this season. They're 4-6 to win the Carabao Cup. They're 9-2 to win this one, 9-4 to get to the final too. So, should be some silverware, you'd think, coming up soon for United.
That's it from us here at the Weekend Preview. For unrivaled coverage ahead of deadline day, you can subscribe to The Athletic now for just $1.99 a month for the first 12 months. To take advantage of that offer, just head to theathletic.com/footballpod. Thanks to the chaps for joining me today. Wherever you're watching the football at the weekend, this FA Cup weekend, I hope you enjoy it.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.